On this day in 1945, Japan surrendered to the Allies, ending World War II. The millions of Americans who were listening to NBC Radio heard the voice of Robert St. John announce the news, as they had a year earlier on D-Day.
This is Robert St. John in the NBC newsroom in New York. Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour. All night long, bulletins have been pouring in from Berlin claiming that D-Day is here. One says, unconfirmed by Allied sources, of course, says that heavy fighting is taking place between the Germans and invasion forces on the Normandy Peninsula, about 31 miles southwest of Le Havre.
Robert St. John broadcast some of the greatest events of the last century. He witnessed the fall of Yugoslavia to the Nazis, the Blitzkrieg of London, and the birth of Israel. Now 99 years old, the legendary journalist recently shared some of his stories with NPR's Renee Montaigne.
56 years ago, remembers Robert St. John, no one in or out of the news business was prepared for America to drop an atomic bomb and then another on Japan. When that happened, St. John ended up behind a microphone for 115 hours straight, with only the briefest of breaks, waiting for word of surrender to come across the wire service's clanking teletype machines.
Over which AP, UP, INS, Universal Service, Reuters, and so forth would deliver their news to us. They all had a system. They would ring five bells to alert everybody in the newsroom that they were about to transmit this piece of important news. If it was a flash, which was defined as a piece of news of transcendental importance, they would ring 10 bells. Now, let me set the scene for you. I am sitting in the broadcasting booth talking to the entire NBC network when I suddenly hear the bells. I kept talking into the microphone, stalling for time. When the bells got to six, I knew that it was a piece of news of transcendental importance. So at the sixth bell, I interrupted myself, and I said into the microphone, "Ladies and gentlemen, World War II is over. The Japanese have agreed to our surrender terms." At this point, the machines were typing out the flash. So the door of the broadcasting booth opened. The little copy girl shoved a piece of paper in front of my face, and it said, "The Japanese have agreed to our terms of surrender." After I got off the air, somebody said to me, "St. John, what would you have done if that piece of paper said, 'The president has been assassinated'?" I said, "I would have put on my hat and coat, walked out of that broadcasting booth, out of the NBC newsroom. I wouldn't have even stopped to collect my pay."
Let me ask you, why did you go into journalism?
Into broadcasting?
Yes.
Well, I covered the first year and a half of the war for the Associated Press as a foreign correspondent covering the Balkans. I got shot up by a Nazi bombing of a troop train I was on. I came home, wrote a book, and then I got an offer from NBC to switch from print journalism to broadcasting. And so before they sent me to London to be Edward R. Murrow's opposite number in London, they gave me to break me in a bit, because I'd never done any broadcasting, they gave me a local New York news program sponsored by Peter Paul's Mounds. That was a coconut candy bar.
And the candy bar's makers expected this veteran war correspondent to read its commercials along with his news copy.
And they were very fussy that you said it, you put all the emphasis on the right words. They made me rehearse their slogan, "What a bar of candy for 5 cents." And I did this news show, and then I did the commercial, That night I got a telephone call in my apartment in New York from a friend who said it was a good broadcast, but why in the hell did you let them make you do the commercial? No respectable news commentator does his commercials. So the next day when I went in to write my script, I said to the news director of NBC, oh, by the way, I'm not doing the commercial tonight. Lowell Thomas doesn't do his commercials. Kelton Bourne doesn't do his commercials. I'm not going to do my commercial. Long pause. My boss said, St. John, get one thing clear. You're not Lowell Thomas, and you're not Kelton Bourne, and you're going to do the commercial tonight. Well, I had no alternative. So my news part of the show ended, and it came to the commercial, and I said into the microphone in a loud voice, what? A bar of candy for 5 cents? That was the last commercial I ever did.
Much rougher than his entry into broadcasting was Robert St. John's beginnings in print journalism. Fresh from college, he returned home to Illinois and started the Cicero Tribune, where the brash young publisher took on a local luminary, Al Capone, better known as Scarface. His exposés of the mobster's brothels and gambling dens soon landed him in an emergency room, beaten to a pulp.
I went directly from the hospital to the office of the chief of police of Cicero and told him I wanted to swear out warrants for the arrest of these 4 men that had beaten me up. And he said, well, you know, St. John, I can't issue warrants for the arrest of any of the Capones. I argued with him. He said, well, come back at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and we'll discuss it. At 9 o'clock the next morning, I appeared in the squad room. He said, go up to my office on the next floor. I went up to his office. I was looking out the window. The door of the office closed, and I turned around, and there was old Scarface himself. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a roll of $100 bills and started peeling them off and said, the boys made a mistake. I've always told them never to bother newspaper men. I have a racket. You have a racket, too. I can't take ads in the Chicago Tribune and advertise my establishments, but every time you write what you call an expose, you advertise for me. And so he held out a bunch of these $100 bills. I, of course, didn't take them. I walked out of the room and left. That was my face-to-face confrontation with Scarface Al Capone.
Well, let me ask you one last question, and that is, do you believe in retirement? Doesn't sound like it.
Retirement. My favorite author is George Seldes, who died at the age of, 105, and he wrote his last book when he was over 100 years old. So, no. I don't believe in retirement. In another 6 months, I'll have my 100th birthday, and my new goal will be 120.
Robert St. John, one of the pioneers of broadcast journalism. I'm Renee Montaigne, NPR News.